So it might be easier to have you have a chumash in front of you. And hopefully this year we're going to talk about a topic that we actually hadn't talked about in the past. It's hard in year 12, I believe, to start finding things we didn't talk about already. And yet, Baruch Hashem, there's still so much to depths of Torah. There's a lot more to talk about. So as we've done in the past, what we do in our Parsha class is we will do an overview of the Parsha just to give an idea of what is happening in the Parsha overall. And then we get a chance to focus on one aspect specifically. So let's begin at the beginning of the parasha. The Torah tells us about Noach. Ela told us Noach that Noach was an ish tzaddik. There's a lot here to unpack, but that Noach was virtuous. Noach was great. He was a tzaddik, and he was tamim hayah b'dorosav. Clearly, that is the case because as everybody else around him is getting killed and destroyed, and the world is sent into a mabul, it is Noah who is the one who is going to be saved. And in the past, we've looked at what is it about Noah that he does right? Well, why is he not succumb to the temptations and the lure of the world in which he was living? And Noah was a Tamim HaYah B'Dor Rosav. He was pure, he was holy, he was able to insulate himself from the rest of the world. And while that was his strength, like Noah was the first person in history at an interview to say, my greatest strength is really my greatest weakness. Okay? Because his greatest strength was that he was insular, so he didn't let the rest of the world affect him and impact him and negatively push him in any way. But at the same time, because he spent time being insular and being just to himself in his own teva, he did not allow himself to see, so to speak, everyone else and what was happening and to daven, as we've talked about in the past. Either way, as we continue on, we know that the world is going to be destroyed. We're going to come back to later why this world is, what the sin was that destroys this generation. What's wrong about them? But either way, Noach is told to make a teva. Say locha tevas atzegover. Now, it's fascinating. I'll share with you here. If you look at the sources here, first, we already have this discussion with Noach and his greatness, right? How great was Noach? Is Noach great only because the rest of his generation was terrible? It's a great argument in sports. Every decade in any sport argues that they were by definition better than the generation before them and the decade before them. And if only they had played in that generation, they would have beat them by a million points. So that's the debate between Moshe and between Noach. On the one hand, Noach is saved from the whole world. The whole world is thrown into a mabul, and yet only Noach is saved. On the other hand, though, Noach does not try to save anybody else. And Noach doesn't seem to, in fact, there's a debate in the Medrash between Noach and Moshe, who is more virtuous. Because Moshe says, I daven for the Jews after the Eikel, I saved them. Okay, so we have this debate, which we've spoken about in the past. If you look at the Rabbeinu Bachya, we'll talk just for a second why Noach does not daven for anybody in his generation. Right? Before we mention what went wrong with this generation, why does Noach not daven for the people in his generation? So there are a number of suggestions. The first answer is, why does he have to? They were terrible. The world had to be redone. I'm not terrible. So that's number one. It's possible that Noach doesn't daven because he doesn't think that there's enough people. In fact, the Rabbeinu Bachi here in source number two says, V'iluhaya b'mnei hadar asara anashim, that Noach if he had 10 men, he would have davened, but he didn't have that. There was nobody. And this is actually the argument in a few weeks from now when we read about Avraham and davening for Sodom. According to many, why does Avram stop at 10? 5, 3, 1? Because you at least need a minion. So Noach looks around. He doesn't have a minion. So Rabbeinu Bachya says, even though there weren't 10, now, maybe he should have davened still, but you could at least argue that Noach was justifiably despaired. I'm going to exert all this effort. There's nobody even here. It's very possible that some suggest Noach just needs a little bit more help. Noach felt that it was above him or Noach felt he lacked, according to Rav Shaul Nathanson, one of the great poskim in the 1800s, he lacked oratory skills. Right? Today, you don't need any oratory skills to be a great leader. But Noach felt like Moshe. Who am I? I can't lead them. I'm not going to give a great speech. So Noach doesn't even try, as opposed to Avraham, who had the great gift of persuasion. So either way, Noach has this big debate of what Noach does and Noach does not do for the rest of his people. And in fact, Noach has like this sadness after the Mabel. And after the Mabel, the Zohar tells us that after the Mabel, Noach is like shocked. He walks out and he can't believe it. Can't believe it. And he begins to cry. And Hashem says, now you're crying. Now you're shedding a tear. Now you're saying, oh my gosh, it's this idea of like lost potential. We spoke about this idea when we talked about Moshe and he hits the rock. Rabbi Lichtenstein talks about missed potential, missed moments in Jewish history. So Noah had a missed moment. He might not have done anything wrong in that time. Maybe he felt he couldn't give a good speech. He felt they weren't going to listen. But he missed an opportunity to save the world. And so often we go through our lives, we have to ask ourselves at every one of those moments, is this a moment that has this potential to it? The Zohar says in Source 6, I delayed all that time and spoke to you, said you would pray for the world. But when you heard that you would be saved, it didn't enter your heart to pray for the world. You built an ark. You were saved, and now the world's been destroyed. You open your mouth to voice prayers and supplications before me. It's a very important idea that in general, even if we think we can change things, we daven. We reach out during times of immense tragedy and confusion and loss. We daven. We daven because that's just the avenue that we turn to. Doesn't mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to grant us what we are asking for, but our daven is always on our lips. And that's what the Zohar says, that was the issue. I'll just share with you one more idea from the great Kedushas Levi. The Kedushas Levi, the Yitzchak of Berdichev, who was known as the great defender of Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, he has an amazing, amazing idea. And he quotes here, he says the following, Hagam Noach tzadik gadol v'tamim. Noach was, see, here's the issue. Everybody likes to like rank Noach. Was he top 5? Was he top 10 tzadikim? Noach was unbelievable. The whole world got destroyed and Noach is saved. So Noach was a great tzadik. But, hayakatan be'enav me'od. In his own eyes, Noach was a nobody. V'lo haya emunah be'atzmo. He did not, it's not that he didn't have faith in the other people or faith in that Hashem could save them. He didn't have faith in himself. Shu tzadik moshel v'yachol levatel ha'gezera. Who am I? I, Noach. I could dive into God. I could break such a decree. Adarabba, haya chashub be'inav kishar hador. He thought, I'm like Yankel and Beryl and Reuven. All right. So somehow, Hayachoshev, imani inatzel bateva, if I'm going to be saved, bevadai hema gam ken yinatzlu. Ah, if I got an RSVP to the teva, for sure Yankel and Beryl got an invitation. Sharei einani tzadik yoser mehem, v'lochem lo espalel al ador. And that's why an amazing idea, Rashi says, that Noach does not enter into the Teva right away. Noach waits until it rains a little harder, and finally the rain drops, like Hashem almost pushes him in the Teva, figuratively and literally. So Rashi says he was mikatnei emuna. He didn't have a lot of faith. So some suggest it means there's no way Hashem's going to bring a Mabel, or Hashem could bring a Mabel, and finally he has to get in the Teva. Or it means, I, in my own eyes, I have little faith in myself. Ratzaloma Noach hayakatan be'inav be'emuna shu tzadik v'yachol levatel ha'gezera. And so often in as we daven for things, you know, in our community here, we have had a week in this community that no community should ever have. The tragedies, the loss that we've had in the Chicago community really in the last week have been immeasurable and with deep pain. And as we approach these different moments, and as we dive in, and as we try to mevatel the gezeira, we have to do it with the sense that yes, I do believe that my tefillos can change something. And if I offered a tefillah and if it went somewhere, somehow it's going to happen somewhere. Because even Noach, who God said he's going to save, is Mekatne Amunah. When the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim would come out from the base, from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the holiest place in the world, on the holiest day of the year, he made a tefillah. And the tefillah was that Hashem, don't listen to the wafers, the traveler's tefillah. Who's the traveler? The traveler is the guy who's leaving after Yontif and he's davening there shouldn't be any rain. Hashem, don't listen to that guy because we that guy's davening, I don't want rain because I have to make it home. But we want rain, it's after Yontif. Really? That's the holiest day of the year after the holiest place in the world? The one or two, the one day he gets to go in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's davening that the guy who's walking home should, and the answer is yeah. Because that one person with tremendous kavana and connection can impact the world and can make God say it's going to rain today. And that's what Noach failed to realize, that we can be mevatel hagezerah. And with comes with a flip side to it, in that when these things don't happen the way we wanted them to, we're sad. And it comes with a sense of, because I daven so hard. It's the story of Nachshon Waxman's father, the Levi of Nachshon Waxman, who said that people were going to have this crisis of faith. People never lit candles before. People never davened. They're davening and they're keeping Shabbos. And his father got up at the Levi and his father said, "It's don't have a crisis of faith." No was also an answer. But with that no comes an idea that I believe that my tefillos can change the mind, can be mevatel, can nullify a terrible decree. And we'll just end the discussion of Noah before we move on to the rest of the parsha with a suggestion from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein talks about a little bit about Noah, and he says the following: to analyze the reasons for Noah's downfall. Prior to the flood, Noah lived in an evil, corrupt environment, immersed in violence, sexual morality. So he managed to remain righteous, unaffected by what went around him. He had debates. Great. So before the flood, Noach, when you know what you're fighting against, when you can identify the enemy, Noach was a tzaddik. But after the flood, it was all different. Noach was no longer unusual. He was now alone. Before him lay the huge task of rehabilitating the world. There was no choice between good and evil. Rather, a choice between one good and another. What's the best way? Many things required rebuilding. What was his priorities? Here he had to stand up only to himself, and he failed. Instead of seeing the most elementary, essential infrastructure, he became drunk. Sometimes we suffer the same problem. We know how to guard ourselves and deal with outside elements that declare themselves opposed to all that is dear to us. But we're not always successful in grappling with our own nature and using our time properly and setting proper priorities and limits. Noach's downfall should teach us to devote careful attention to this battle. It's an important reminder that it's not only that we are fighting an outside enemy, but we have things in our own lives that take our time, that draw us away. It's the battle that we fight is not only when we can identify good versus evil, but good versus good. And how do I prioritize? We mentioned last Shabbos about, what's my priorities? So that was Noach's issue. So Noach goes ahead, Noach makes a teva. Why does Noach have to make a teva? Hashem could have saved them on a little floaty that you put on your arms, or on a little piece of a 4x4. Why is it that Noach has to make a teva? Says the Rabbeinu Bakir, because he got to do something. If God is going to make a miracle, you have to be a little bit involved in the process. So we know that Noach goes ahead, Noach makes this teva. We're already, only in the beginning of the parasha, we got to move faster. And one of the interesting things about Noach is that you find what comes up, the phrase repeatedly, if you look through the parasha, the phrase repeatedly that comes up with Noach is Vayas Noach. Noach always followed orders. And there's a huge part of Judaism which is following orders. But it's Avraham, though, in next week's parasha that takes the jump, who takes initiative, who fights the four kings without being told, who does these things without necessarily following exact orders from God. But Noach is, God says, do this, Noach does it. But Avram's going to take it to the next level. Okay, we know that after the Mabul lasts 40 days and 40 nights, of course, we won't discuss all the different fascinating ideas about how long it lasted and the sending out of the dove. But once the Mabul is complete, Noach goes ahead, Noach offers karbanos, and then we have the rebuilding of the world. And now we have this covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with Hashem and the world. Hashem wants to tell them, this is not going to happen again. I will not once again destroy the world with a rainbow. And it's this rainbow that is fascinating within the world of Halacha. I don't know how many months ago I was in Chicago, but there was an unbelievable rainbow. Not that long ago here. One of the clearest rainbows I've ever seen. The clearest rainbow I've ever seen in my life. And somebody was outside, and we all went outside to see it. And happens to be, it's a fascinating halacha. Because really, a rainbow is Hashem saying, I'm not going to destroy the world again with the Mabul. You're bad. You're not doing the right thing. But I won't destroy the world again with a Mabul. The Ramban says that a rainbow is a bow and arrow. Okay, but the bow and arrow is that the arrow is facing upwards. Right? If you were to take a rainbow and shoot an arrow through it, it would go up to Shemayim, up to the sky, because Hashem's saying it's not coming down towards the world. And Rav Hirsch talks about the fact that a rainbow is all the colors, everything together as one, as one community. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm not going to destroy the rainbow, I'm not going to destroy the world again. And then we get the rebuilding of the world. We have the Torah list at the end of Parshas Noach, the various people that come from that populated the world, and then we get to Migdal Bavel. Our Migdal Bavel, that we've spent time in the past going over Migdal Bavel. So what was Migdal Bavel's issue? The Tower of Bavel. So what did they do wrong? So it seems the Tower of Bavel does wrong. Well, number one is they have a claim against God. They said, either why is God up there, we're down here, or we're gonna build a tower up to Shemai. Okay, it could be they wanted to wage some ideological battle against Hashem himself. Or they thought, as they made a calculation, just like Adam, last week's parsha, we know that the Gemara tells us that Adam thinks the world is going to come to an end, right, at some point until the days get longer. So the Jews, the people in the world said, all right, well, we made a calculation, and every 1,656 years, we're done. So here's what we're going to do. We are going to make a tower. We're going to reinforce the heavens. They didn't trust God's promise that a flood wouldn't happen again. So they wanted to go ahead and thwart that plan of God to destroy the world. So they make this tower. One of the most beautiful ideas about the Migdal Bavel comes from the Netziv. The Great Atzilut Yehuda Berlin in the 1800s says the Netziv, the tower, was not a tower like we're a tower to fight. Let's build it all the way up to Shemayim. The tower was a tower really that was done to create one society. We're going to have a world in which everybody is doing the same thing. It's a watchtower. We're watching that everyone is doing the same thing. You're following the same orders. You're all exactly falling in line. So what does Hashem do? What does Hashem do? Hashem says, no, I'm not going to destroy the world, because we're getting there. We're getting there. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to mix it up. I'm going to mix up your languages. I'm going to mix up the people. The world thrives not on uniformity, but on unity, on working together, being diverse. And that's what Hashem does to this nation. So we're not destroying them, but we're going to mix it up a little bit. The other idea is that the people of Migdal Bavel, we're doing it for themselves. They said, Na'aseh, if you have a chumash and you go to Perek Yud Aleph, so the pasuk, when it's talking about them building this tower, the pasuk Dalet says, Hava nivne lanu ir, umigdal v'rosho bashamayim, v'na'aseh lanu shem. You know what we're going to do? We are going to make a tower because we want a name for ourselves. We want a name, Na'aseh Lanu Shem. And Hashem says, well, that's not the right thing. Because next week's parasha, you find Avraham, and when he builds the Mizbeach, it's Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. Avram takes it from being just about themselves to about being about their relationship with God and their mission in this world. And that is, as we're building towards Avram and the beginning of the Jewish people, Parshas Noach is like this bridge, this rebuilding that doesn't go exactly the way that we had wanted it, but we learned a lot about the rebuilding of the world. So what we're going to do is we're going to actually go all the way back to the beginning of the parsha. So that's a very, very brief and quick overview of this parsha, Parshas Noach, including the Mabul, why Noach doesn't try to daven for anybody, the rainbow, and the Migdal Bavel at the end. Well, we're going to talk about what exactly goes wrong for this nation. Wait, what happened? Why is it that they are going to be destroyed? Okay, so if you go back to the beginning of the parsha, the Torah tells us the following. The Torah tells us, and one of the things we know at the end is that, you know, after all of this, Noach feels like Noach is overcome with despair at the end of the parsha. That is very clear. He's sort of, you know, he's at a loss of how to, as we're looking at how to rebuild the world. But it's also, Noach is unsure. He's worried, what's going to happen if God destroys the world again? It's an amazing thing if you look at the end of the parsha. Then we'll talk about the beginning. But when Noach at the end, when Noach finally comes out of the teva, and Noach, he's not sure what to do. So if you read the psukim carefully, there's something strange. Hashem tells Noach, "Say minat teva, go out, ata ishtecha v'na, everybody." Later, Hashem brings the rainbow. So why? Meaning Hashem says leave, and then Hashem brings the rainbow. So says Rashi, "Shenoach doeg lasog privya v'rivya." Noach didn't want to have children. Noah says, "I cannot bring people into this world until I know this won't happen again." And Hashem complies. And Hashem says, "To show you that I'm in agreement, here is this oath, this sign." Noah is nervous. He's unsure. If God doesn't destroy the world again, Hashem says, "Here's your, don't worry. It's not going to happen." And then something clicks for Noah. For 120 years, Noach built a teva. 120 years he spent telling the people about the impending destruction. 120 years he spent as they walked back and forth past his teva. And Noach told them, it's coming. But 120 years, he never once asked Hashem to save the nation. And now after the Mabul, Hashem, Noah says, "God, show me a sign." And God says, "No problem. Here's a rainbow." And all of a sudden, it's not that he realizes that I could have negotiated in the past. Maybe some suggest this is why Noah drinks. Noah drinks and gets drunk in this parsha. Not because the world was destroyed. He understands that. He saw the corruption, the breakdown of society. He offers karbanos to Hashem. He only drinks now because he looks back and he says, "What if? What could have been? What life would have been like had I asked God earlier to save the world? Would Hashem have listened?" We don't know, and we'll never know. What he does know is that he didn't try, and it's those feelings that he would have perhaps saved an entire world that leads him to this stage at the end of his life. And we are often faced with issues all the time, not to live life always asking what if, but it comes up in a variety of ways in our religious lives. We look back, Avraham, who took all the risks in the world. The Pasuk calls him Avraham Ivri because he was on one side, they were on the other side. He took a risk. He discovered, he spread monotheism because he took a risk. And what would happen if he lived a life, what we call of Zerizus, of his confidence to in himself to be the father of the Jewish people. So Noah is a cautionary tale about sort of not believing in ourselves. And because we don't believe in ourselves, we don't push ourselves. And at some point we have this revelation like, "Oh my gosh, I could have, nobody leap tag could have accomplished so much." And that's really the Noach at the end of the parasha is not Noach at the beginning. He goes from an Isha Lokim to an Isha Adama. He so to speak, decreases in his Kedusha. because he's completely overcome with despair that he didn't even try, with a lack of emunah in himself, and that's what leads to Noach at the end of the parsha. Okay, hey Manny. All right, let's go now to the beginning of the parsha. So I want to talk about, for the last few minutes we have, what is the sin that leads this nation to its destruction? The Torah tells us, Vayole Noach has his son, Shem Cham and Yafes, Vatishaches Aretz Lzei Elokim, Vatimleo Aretz Chamas. The world is filled with Chamas. So Chamas is robbery. And if you were to translate it, as the art school does, it's stealing, it's robbery. Now, okay, if I were to ask you to rank the worst sins that you would get punished for, or the world would be destroyed for, maybe you'd have it top five. I don't think you'd have it like over adultery, murder, idol worship, like the big three. So why is it that Hamas is this terrible sin? And in fact, Rashi quotes, and I'll share with you here as well, it's also in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in source number 9, that the Dora Mabul, Avru al Hakol, they did everything bad. The worst thing was that so to speak, the final straw, the nail in the coffin to say you're done, was stealing. The question is, why? Why is stealing so bad? And as we learn it the last little bit, we're going to learn that this is a theme that comes up throughout Tanakh. The truth is throughout Jewish history. So let's discuss a little bit, what is so bad about stealing? So first we'll look at the Gur Arye, the Maharal. So the Maharal here says that stealing, Chasimas Hagzir Ala Gezel, the Maharal explains that when you start stealing, and basically you are taking away the bedrock of how this world functions, business, honesty, truth, MS, Hashem says, I can't do this anymore. That in fact, Hashem was waiting. He was chas al ha'olam. He had patience. I won't destroy. And then all of a sudden, when he sees the world is stealing, Hashem says, that's it. Once you're at that low level, I can't do anything anymore. So Hashem says, I can't hold back, and now this decree is going to come forth. So why is stealing so bad? What makes thievery terrible? So we'll go through a number of opinions so to understand what is so bad about what happens here. So the easiest answer is that stealing is a lack of faith in God. Why? Because the Gemara tells us, whatever money you're supposed to have, Hashem has set that money from Rosh Hashanah until, you know, it's decided. Now, that doesn't mean that you cannot work, not do anything, right? You cannot go to, you know, wherever you work. You're a lawyer, you're a real estate, you're a doctor, okay? And you don't go to work, and all of a sudden you make no money, and you say, God, I didn't make any money. Maybe that's what I was supposed to make from God. I was supposed to make no money. That doesn't make any sense. You had money you could have made, and you didn't make it. So if God has determined how much I'm supposed to make, and I'm supposed to work hard for it, but if I start stealing, that's saying I do not believe that God is giving me what I think. And therefore, stealing, there's certain mitzvahs, when we think about them, they're blatant show of lack of emunah. Stealing, avodah zarah, of course, jealousy. When I am jealous because what that person has, I think I should have, that's saying I don't think that God is giving me exactly what I'm supposed to get. And if God is giving what I'm supposed to get, then that shows a lack of faith in God. So the Gemara says, that's why. This is the worst sin. It wasn't the worst immoral. We've had immoral people throughout history. It's that this generation, when they're stealing and they're not believing in the way the world functions, we got to start over. This comes up. I'll just share with you a little bit before we get more into what this Hamas is. Comes up in the sin of Nineveh. The people in Nineveh, we just read a few weeks ago, Maftir Yonah, their sin was Hamas. And the Radak says, Kineged Kulam. That's the worst. Ba'olav Nigzera Gzerosam. Number one. Number two, on Erev Yom Kippur. On Erev Yom Kippur, some people have a minog to do kaparos with a chicken. Okay? Kaparos with a chicken. Okay? So what do we do now? If you look at the Shulchan Aruch says that Vizarkin b'nei me'ehem, you're supposed to like throw out their innards. If you actually were to shecht, you throw out their innards. Why? Says the Chai Adam, because they're fed off shenizonin min ha-gezel. Because they eat, they steal things. And we don't want any part of that before Yom Kippur. Meaning, even the kaparos that we do can't have any sense of stealing with them. Why is this so bad? So the first answer is because when I steal, I am showing God, I do not believe in how you run the world. I'm going to figure it out. I'll take care of it. I'll make my money this way. And that's a lack of emunah. Okay. But there's another thing about chamas. Look at this medrash here in Source 15. What is chamas? Now, chamas is not regular stealing. Chamas is a certain kind of stealing. Lama ki malah haaretz chamas mipnehem, says the Medrash, ezu chamas vezu gezel. What's the difference? One's stealing, one's robbery. Amar Rav Chanina, chamas eino shave pruta. I'm stealing less than like a few cents. I'm stealing nothing. The gezel is shave pruta. I'm stealing a little bit. That's valuable. Okay, like when a person gets married, they have to buy a ring. The chassan buys a ring. That's shave pruta. Ever wonder what the rabbi's talking about up there? He's asking the eidim, show me the ring. You bought the ring? Yes, I bought the ring. Is it worth a shave pruta? Is it worth, you know, a dollar? Should be worth more than a dollar, but at least a dollar. Okay? Less than a dollar is chamas. So what happens? Listen to this medrash. The kach anshei mabel osim ha'echa mehem motzi kupasa malea tormisu. They would put out this like basket of beans. Like little seeds, they would leave out, okay? And v'zhoyezeba v'notel pachos mishave pruta. So I put my basket down in the marketplace, and you came and took half a bean, 1 cent worth, and you came until the whole basket's gone. But you could say, you can't take me to court for that. That's not even stealing. And the other person, that's not even stealing. So why is this so bad? It's self-justification. When we begin to self-justify and say, what's so bad? Less than a shava pruta. I didn't do anything harmful. He didn't do anything harmful. It's a societal, pathological issue. No one's saying that they're doing anything wrong. So everyone's doing everything wrong. And that was the issue. They each were not owning up to it. They each weren't taking responsibility. They each were justifying that they were correct. And, you know, so often we run into this issue, especially in our world today of individuality, in which we sometimes do justify the things that we do. I in school all the time, anytime somebody, like, as a joke, steals a pencil case, steals a this or steals a that, I tell them, you know, like with my eighth grade boys, it's always, at some point in the year, you know you're an eighth grade boy when you start stealing a pencil case. Like, that's like a very important step in being an eighth grader. That and dropping water bottles on the floor that weigh 1,000 pounds. Okay? And I tell them, that is gezel from the Torah. That is gezel de araisa. If you take something as a joke, it was just a joke. We self-justify things that we do because for whatever those reasons are. And that was the Dor HaMabul. The Dor HaMabul was self-justifying their sin of stealing even just a little bit. And that takes us to understanding about gezel. So gezel is fascinating. Gezel is really about stealing, about lying. The smag, Rav Moshe Kusi in the 1300s would travel around giving speeches. And one of the things he would tell people was, we're still in exile because we're lying. Because we're not being MS Jews. We're not telling the truth. It's all part of stealing. It's a problem within our culture that it's become okay, and that's why God says we have to start again. That was the issue. Immorality, maybe we could reteach, we could realign the moral compass, but not when it comes to stealing. I'll never forget one of my first years in the shul, a guy called me up, and he said that he wanted to meet me. So he comes to my office, not wearing a yarmulke. I don't know who he was, I didn't recognize him. And he said that, I think he was in his 50s, that he had grown up in the shul many, many years ago. And as a kid, he remembers playing some in the shul and he broke some window. And he's now 40s, 50s. He's married. He has children and he's an alcoholic. Happens to be that he's a working alcoholic. He's was a high-powered lawyer. He has a job, but he was an alcoholic and he was an Alcoholics Anonymous. An Alcoholics Anonymous, he has to pay back. So he went through his life to pay back the things that he did wrong. And one of the things he felt that he had to do was pay back for what he felt he stole from the shul. And he gave me back, whatever, a few hundred dollars for the, it was an amazing, amazing, I told him it's with inflation, it should have been a lot more, but whatever, you can always try to fundraise. Gezel, stealing, is a problem because it shows that we are taking what God, we are taking things into our own hands. But it's not just at Parshas Noach or in Sefer Yonah. At the holiest day of the year, which is Yom Kippur, at the holiest time, which is Ne'ilah, if you look in your machzer, and in your machzer, the last tefillah we say, there is no time in the Jewish calendar like Ne'ilah. It is the most emotional, high power time of the year. And you're davening. And if we could pick one sin that we're going to daven for, it's thrown into that last tefillah of Ne'ilah. And we have a few extra paragraphs we don't say the rest of the year. Atayiv Dalta. And in that tefillah we say, Leman Nechtal Me'oshek Yodenu. God, please forgive us because we stole. Why? The holiest day of the year. The holiest day of the year? So listen to Rabbi Soloveitchik. Says Rabbi Soloveitchik, why is theft singled out with a special emphasis in Ne'ilah? The reason that theft actually covers every type of sin. With every sin he commits, the Jew forgoes his right to existence. As he violates the condition upon which he exists in dress, stealing from God. What Rabbi Soloveitchik is suggesting is an amazing, amazing, very powerful idea. At the end of Ne'ilah, we say, Lama nechtal me'oshek yodenu. Not because maybe I stole something. Yes, it's very possible. I'll never forget, 1 year I had this chus. A few times I was able to hear a Shabbos Shuvah Drasha from Rabbi Penner. So 1 year he spoke about stealing. He was speaking about the topic of stealing and how prevalent it is among the davening and the things that we do. And in the stories in Yonah, and I remember him saying that after he prepared for this drasha, he just started dropping $20 bills wherever he went, in his office, in the shul. He, for sure, we took a pencil, but by accident, I thought they're not going to mind if I use this. So he just started dropping $20 bills wherever he went. We might steal. So it's very possible that as our year is like about to be sealed in the book upstairs, we're like, maybe I stole. I have to look back. I have to be honest. All right, very possible. It's a good reminder. Please pay your anything on your account balance. But Rabbi Soloveitchik is suggesting that at the end of Ne'ilah, what we're really doing is saying, God, I'm sorry if I, Aaron Liebtag, I stole from you. I didn't use my capabilities and my strengths and my personality to serve this world better. We've been doing this tefillah this week. We started with Moda Ani. That's the Ani. That's the me. That's my role in this world. And Lama Nechta Me'oshek Yodenu is not just that I didn't pay my workers back properly, which we should, and it was a late payment or this or that. But rather, my issue was I wasn't used properly. And that's Noach, right? Noach maybe realized I could have done more. I could have davened for the generation. I could have offered something. So at the end of Ne'ilah, we don't just say, maybe I stole some money from my office and I took a pencil without asking. But maybe I didn't use what I could have. I didn't impact the world the way that I could have. And Noach should leave us with this idea of what we could be giving back to God. Right, when we steal, how do you pay back stealing? Person pays back stealing, they really have to pay what's called kefel, double. Pay back what I stole and then the amount again. It's double. We have to look back into our year and say, well, if I missed something from earlier, so I have to make it up. And it's this constant reminder that we are put here for a mission and for a purpose. And we are always reevaluating that. That's why at the end of Ne'ilah, we're like reevaluating my year. How did I do? How did I fare? What impact did I make? Could I have made a bigger impact? What am I going to do in the year ahead? What change am I going to see with myself, around people around me, always growing as a person. And that's chamas. That's manechta me'oshek yodeinu. Not just stealing, but when these people, this Dor HaMabul, saw, number one, that they were justifying their stealing, a problem. Number two, when they realized, hey, I'll just take what I want because I don't care what God has decided for me or not, do over. We're starting the world again. But really, when this nation is saying to God, we don't care, we're going to steal, meaning we're in it for ourselves, we're not here for you and to help and to serve and to create a relationship, then God says it's do over time. And when we see a rainbow shouldn't just say, ah, Hashem didn't destroy the world. The rainbow should say, all right, what can I do? How can I impact? What more can I do in this world? And that's how Noach leads us to Avram, who, of course, we're going to learn next week, makes tremendous impact and uses his life to the fullest, to always making sure he is, till the end of his life, making a positive impact on the world.